Hi, this is Aaron Newcomb, and on this episode of Floss Weekly, Guillermo joins me to talk about OpenHMD. This is a system that is an open source driver for all sorts of VR devices. You're not going to want to miss it. It's coming up right now on Floss Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Floss Weekly is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Floss Weekly with Aaron Newcomb and Guillermo Amaral, episode 417 for January 10th, 2017. Open HMD. This episode of Floss Weekly is brought to you by GoCD, an on-premise, open-source continuous delivery server by ThoughtWorks. GoCD gives you complete control of and visibility into your deployments across multiple teams. To learn more about GoCD, visit gocd.io/twit for a free download. Hey, this is Floss Weekly, the show about free Libre open source software and streaming issues. I'm Aaron Newcomb. I'll explain that in a minute. But welcome to Floss Weekly. I'm sitting in for Randall. Randall's on a cruise. He's somewhere. We don't know where. He could be anywhere. All we know is he's on a boat. At least we hope he's on the boat and he hasn't fallen off. And he will be back, I believe, next week. And we'll get to all of that stuff at the end of the show about the upcoming episodes and things like that. But for now, you're stuck with me. I'm Aaron Newcomb. And as usual, I'm joined by an ultra lovely hot babe on the red carpet. That's Guillermo Amaral. There he is.
Yes. my hair is a mess today, so I'm not going to actually show it off.
Oh, but, you know, it looks great. Fine. Yeah. Who did your dress this year?
it's a mix from Target and Walmart, so it's okay.
Yeah, that's great. I just watching the Golden Globes and stuff here, so there's all this red carpet, everybody dressed up, all frou-frou, woo-wee. But anyway, we're not here to talk about the Golden Globes. We're here to talk about open source software. We got some great guests coming up today. They're going to be talking about OpenHMD, which is, as I understand it, we'll find out from our guests, something to do with VR. It has to do with open source drivers for VR goggles and all that kind of stuff. It sounds really interesting, at least to me. It's something that's certainly needed in this space as the technology is growing quickly and rapidly. We talk about VR a lot on the Twit Network, you know, whether you like it or not, I think it's here at least for a while. Guillermo, do you use VR, and have you ever used like an Oculus Rift or anything like that?
I've tried the Oculus on different shows and stuff I've gone to, but I haven't actually owned one. But I have tried Cardboard a lot since, you know, that's cheap. And I think everybody gives you some of these things all over the place, right? So, I've tried it, just not really gotten the full immersive experience yet, you know, like in a big room with stuff hanging in and, you know, trying to pick up things, which is something I would like to do at some point.
Yeah, definitely. I've used it a little bit, mostly at Twit, actually, when I go to Twit. They were working on a VR rig there. But we'll find out from our guests why, indeed, they need open source driver. I mean, I'm not sure why it's actually necessary. So they're going to let us know in just a minute why we actually need an open source driver for VR goggles. Sounds great to me in theory, but we'll see how this actually came about in just a minute. But first, we need to talk about a brand new sponsor, actually, for Floss Weekly. I'm so excited about these guys because it really relates to our audience here. I did a little research on them. It sounds really cool. And this episode of Floss Weekly is sponsored by GoCD. I'm so excited. GoCD is an on-premise, open-source, continuous delivery, that's the CD, server created by ThoughtWorks. And with GoCD comprehensive pipeline modeling, you can model complex workflows across multiple teams with ease. It's parallel and sequential execution. GoCD can easily configure dependencies for fast feedback and on-demand deployment. This stuff's really cool if you're doing software development. The value stream map lets you track a change from commit to deploy at a glance. GoCD's real power is in the visibility it provides over your end-to-end workflow. You get complete control and visibility into all your deployments across the organization. And this is where it really shines because they have this really cool workflow mapping, visual workflow mapping that you can see exactly each step in the process and what's going on. They also offer complete customization for all your software's individual needs. GoCD will perform tests written in most languages or frameworks. Their test reporting will tell you in exactly what change set and on what platform a test started breaking. That is really cool. So say goodbye to deployment panic and hello to consistent, predictable deliveries. GoCD is the best continuous integration and deployment tool you've probably never heard of. To learn more about GoCD and for a free download, visit gocd.io/twit. That's gocd.io/twit. Commercial support and enterprise add-ons, including disaster recovery, are also available. And we thank GoCD for their support of Floss Weekly. And now let's bring on our guests. Let's bring them on. So first we have Frederick Hulton, and I'm sorry we didn't practice these names before the show, but Frederick is the co-founder of the Open HMD project. So Frederick, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
And then we also have Joey Ferwerda. Ferwerda? Am I saying that right, Ferwerda. Joey?
Ferwerda. It's a Frisian name.
Ferwerda. No, there's no way my mouth's going to make that shape. Just call you Joey. How's that? Now, we do have to explain, Joey, you also work on the project, and that's great. But people who are watching the show right now are wondering what the heck's going on, right? And I mentioned at the beginning that we had some streaming issues. Joey, why are you green?
So I'm actually 3D right now, which is, of course, one of the best ways to view a podcast completely in 3D, even if you're listening. But, this is a Intel F100 camera, which is a RealSense type camera, which has multiple sensors. And, of course, in Linux, they made the default one, the depth sensor. So because we're now change for the streaming issues to another program, it can only open the first sensor. So I'm in 3D.
So if anybody's wondering, we did have a little bit of technical issues this morning, and this is the best we could do. So we apologize for that, but it's kind of hilarious actually. But at least we can see you move around, and we can imagine what you might look like, and maybe someone out in the community will get inventive and 3D model you a body, a physical body or one that looks more like a regular person, and we'll edit that in afterwards. Yes. But let's talk about the project. So let's go back to Frederick for a moment. Frederick, why in the world? First of all, I don't know if I explained it correctly. Open HMD, what is it exactly? What are you guys trying to accomplish?
Well, it's a completely open source driver. From the start, we started with the Oculus Rift DK1 because they promised a Linux driver, but they never delivered. They didn't deliver for several months, and we felt that we should make it happen. So we started writing our own driver, and it turned out pretty good for the DK1 because it had pretty simple sensors and stuff. So basically it was just to get a Linux driver for the thing, pretty much. Then later on, Oculus actually delivered on their promise and released a Linux driver for it, but then they dropped it later. So now we're like one of two or three drivers that actually delivers Oculus Rift support to Linux.
Oh, that's fantastic. Go ahead.
So some of the other things we wanted to achieve was that we write a driver that has a common API that you can implement with different hardware. So like if you remember back in the days when 3DFX released their Glide API that only they supported, mm-hmm. and all the other ones like lag behind and then gathered around OpenGL and then DirectX later on. I thought maybe we could just skip that whole proprietary crap and just skip to a open API that anyone can implement right away. So we designed the thing with that in mind. so that we could keep a stable ABI. So you can basically just write your own driver. If say you're developing an HMD, you can just like swap out the DLL. And if a game uses a OpenHMD, you can use it with your own HMD that you're developing and stuff like that. Make it hacker friendly, if you will.
And does this only run on Linux, or could I use this on other platforms? Could I use these drivers on other platforms as well?
We support macOS X or macOS 10, I believe it's called, and Linux and Windows. So no,
oh, great.
We can use it on all the three major platforms.
Hey, you're so forgetting forgetting FreeBSD, which is also working. You're forgetting Android, which we actually have a framework for as well. And there are some people who run it on ARM processors and stuff like that. So
let me. Yes. I want to ask about that because you know Guillermo and I do a lot of stuff on embedded systems. I use a Raspberry Pi for stuff all the time. I mean, that's not going to be powerful enough to really run anything meaningful, is it? Using these drivers.
Well, it depends on exactly what it is you want to run. I mean, the Raspberry Pi, it's capable 3D wise, especially the latest version. But sure, you're not going to play Crysis on the thing, but you could play something a bit more abstract in graphics, perhaps. It's doable.
Yeah, because there this could be really. Just a second, Joey. This could be really cool if you're. I'm thinking if I'm building a project and I want to use the technology to illustrate something, or to build some sort of interactive demo or something like that. This would be perfect. It doesn't have to necessarily be high quality, like you say, but if it works, then that's just another way to interface with someone's project or someone's artwork. It sounds really cool to me. Joey, go ahead.
So for the Raspberry Pi, there's actually a project called VR0, which recently released a small framework to that works with OpenHMD to do like low quality graphics content and trying to optimize it. So people in embedded, but also in education or in academics can have like smaller lightweight opportunities to work with VR.
That's really, really cool. I think it's really exciting. Joey, let's stick with you for a second. Frederick mentioned before, I think DK or DK1. When I think of DK, I think of Donkey Kong. I'm guessing that's not what this is. So for those that aren't immersed in the VR universe as you guys are, what is DK1 and these other symbols? What do they actually refer to?
So DK stands for Development Kit. When Oculus first started out, they did this big Kickstarter and they said, well, we're going to work on a consumer version. But before that, we need a couple of developer kits. So they started this naming scheme where they released DK1, which is Development Kit 1, DK2, which is Development Kit 2, and eventually we now have the consumer version, which is called CV1, which is short for Consumer Version 1. And that kind of sticked around as the version number for the Oculus devices.
And you mentioned Android as well. I just want to clarify. So this would work with Cardboard, for example?
Yeah. So what we did is because there are a lot of multi-platform game engines and graphics libraries, which they tend to compile to Android using a Java shim. So they just compile everything as C++ or C and then use a little bit of a Java shim to make sure they don't have to maintain different types of versions. So what we did is we implemented the driver, which uses the native sensors from the native development kit from Android to be able to provide the same framework for your PC application as you would work on Android. So yeah, this would work with something like a Cardboard or alternatives if you just set up your render pipeline the same as you would normally do.
What could I do with this? Let's go back to Frederick for a moment. What could I do with this that I might not be able to do with the proprietary drivers? I mean, obviously, right for now anyway, run on Linux is the obvious one. But, you know, what else could I do with this maybe that I wouldn't be able to do with the proprietary drivers?
Well, as I mentioned earlier, since the API is the same for all the hardware we implement, you could, if you're developing your own hardware, your own HMD, you could make your own version of OpenHMD which supports your new hardware, and then you can just replace the driver used by a game that uses OpenHMD, and you can play the game with your hardware, which is something you can't really do with the proprietary drivers.
Right. So that's a huge benefit for developers, obviously. And by the way, before we get too far into this, again, just for those viewers that aren't into VR, maybe they're just learning about it, what is HMD?
It's a head-mounted display.
Ah, so there we go.
VR face goggles, brick, if you will.
So how long have you guys actually been working on this? I mean, you said that since at some point Oculus didn't release the Linux driver. I mean, what time frame was that? How long has this been going on?
I think it was in March 2013 they released the DK1, the developer one, and we released in May 2013. So it was a couple of months after the DK1 was released.
Wow! Holy moly! I guess so. Do you guys have let's start with Frederick. Do you have a background in VR technology or display technology? I mean, how did you know how to do all this just in a couple of months?
Trial and error.
I
never worked with drivers. I've never worked with USB. I've never worked with video devices. We were just playing around with the hardware and see what we can do. And we actually got it working. So we released it. That was pretty much it.
That's awesome. And I think that's another benefit. I always harp on the benefits of open source software, but another great benefit is that you can learn about this stuff online. And you're not just sitting back wondering, how do I make a video driver? How do I make this happen? Joey, what about you? Do you have any background in working with VR technology before you started working on this project?
So originally, when I found out about OpenHMD, we had Oculus DK1 lying around. I worked at a game development studio called ThorWorks back then, and I still do. And so we have been experimenting quite a bit with virtual reality, and eventually became well accustomed with with doing research with VR, working with other parties who did stuff like that. So during the first period of time where we just used OpenHMD basically for like the multi-platform support, I was not that much into VR yet. I knew about some concepts and I read mostly about uses in modern psychology and stuff. But throughout the whole process and when I eventually became a contributor to OpenHMD, because I joined in a little bit later in the process, I had more background experience with using the devices, knowing what the devices were all about, the differences between them, different types of input situations, or psychological reactions on VR. So, but the stuff I mostly do with OpenHMD is, again, like Frederick said, trial and error, and just reading a lot of sources and documentation and byte dumps and stuff like that.
Right. Now, Joey, I noticed you also have done some work in the bio you sent us. You said you've done some work with Blender as well. Can you actually use this software to integrate Blender and do some things with VR with Blender and the Oculus or other technologies?
So I've been doing a little bit of contribution to Blender for years now, and beginning of this year, or beginning of last year, 2017 for you. So the beginning of last year, I was asked by Ton Roosendaal to help with a small VR project in Blender called Caminandas VR, which they did together with Google, where they would re-render a part of their Caminandas, which is one of their open movie projects, in VR to show as a demonstration for the cardboard. And from that moment on, we found out that because of the lack of support and Linux being very prominent within the Blender community in the Blender Institute itself, I basically started integrating OpenHMD into Blender. So this has been going on since last April, May, somewhere around there. And I'm actually in the process right now of getting the HMD integration with OpenHMD ready for master to be released next March in Blender 2.79.
Okay, so go ahead.
Yeah, so that's going to be fun because people with different types of devices just will be able to put on a device of their choice and basically preview their 3D modeling in it, do real-time animation within a VR pipeline, but also to preview renders that they're doing for VR. So it's just to optimize the entire VR workflow, basically.
Sorry about that. The problem with the green screen there, it kind of makes it hard to read your lips a little.
That's okay.
Yeah, so you mentioned USB before, and I wanted to first maybe get into what type of connections these devices have, because I know most of them have HDMI and USB, one being for the video and one being for the sensors and input sources and whatnot, right? So maybe you can go into what exactly the library handles, because if you are handling USB here, it would only be a driver for the input sensors from the device. It's not modifying the video in any way.
So as of now, most of the devices are using USB still, and the information over the USB is mostly things like the IMUs, so the accelerometers, the gyroscopes, and some have some more intricate stuff like FPGAs, which have more information going over the USB line. And OpenHMD currently focuses most of the time on those parts of the developments. Though we have been planning a library called OpenHMD GFX, which will also do stuff like handling OpenGL and handling all types of more intricate rendering stuff. But OpenHMD, as of now, it does some stuff with video. Like, for instance, on the Oculus CV1, you have to enable the screens to be able to use them. So they don't report to the operating system until you send it the specific type of commands to enable the operating system to use it as an actual screen. So we do these kind of things already. And that's mostly HDMI or DisplayPort.
Okay, I was wondering that, including that was one of my questions following up this, because I know some of these devices need to initialize, kind of like the old Xbox sensor, that what's the name of it anymore? I can't remember the name for that sensor. Yeah, Kinect. It would need to initialize before it actually send anything back, right? So some of these devices do require that sort of specialized input then. What else besides, gyros and everything else can you do with these headsets?
So if you look at some more of the intricate devices like the HTC 5, which is now one of the more full packages when it comes to VR, they have actual controllers that have full tracking using things called lighthouse sensors, which do positional tracking within the space with infrared and all types of other techniques. So these are way more difficult things to implement for us. And although we have been working to get these kind of things happening, they are very heavy on the math as well. And we currently don't have that much people within the team which are totally math magicians. So if you're really good at math and want to help out, obligatory plug, of course. But yeah, there's a lot possible with positional tracking of objects, walking around in a physical space. Eventually, devices are going to allow for you to place objects and have them recognized in some way. In the first period of time it's going to be like pre-made objects with trackers built in, but maybe eventually we will be able to put trackers on random objects and have them track. So if you have like a glass, which you I'm holding up a glass, by the way. You can put on like a tracker, and then the device knows it's a glass and what the dimensions are of the glass, and you can within the VR space move that around. And yeah, so a lot of interesting things are going to happen with VR, which and some of them, actually most of them, are already implemented in some way or another.
You know, somebody in the chat room actually mentioned, I think it's Candy Angel, that the library doesn't only just work with headsets, but it also supports other VR-related hardware. I'm guessing maybe the stick things you use while you're playing a game or something. Is that something you can elaborate on?
Yeah, these are things like the physical controllers. There are devices which has been actually made in, I think, the late 80s or the early 90s, called the P5 gloves, which are basically like this really sci-fi looking glove that you can put on with a big tower that tracks your finger positions and whatever. And of course, with the whole VR craze going on right now, these things are really cool to implement and use in conjunction with VR devices like HMDs. And because of the way we implemented an HMD, they will be interchangeable as well. So you don't really have to be stuck with the specific type of peripherals that the normal proprietary drivers will have you use. So
that's good. So you can mix and match then. That sounds really good for the consumer in this case. You mentioned that this device came out in the late 80s, early 90s. Is that right? It wouldn't be using USB then, would it?
What does the P5 use? I think it uses USB still. Yeah.
Really?
Mid to late 90s, really.
Ah, okay.
The P5. But I think it's USB. As Candy Angel.
And that's probably late 90s then. Yeah, I don't think the USB standard got settled until like 96 or something. So I was wondering, maybe you guys support also parallel port or something? I wasn't sure.
Well, no. Well, if we can get our hands on it, why not?
You can always make everything work, right? That's good. So you guys are using USB, and I was a little surprised since you guys mentioned that you do support all these different operating systems like FreeBSD, one of my favorites also. QNX maybe, I'm not sure, probably not. But in this case, I'm guessing you guys are using like libUSB or something to actually handle the driver base for this, or are you literally implementing a driver for each one of those operating systems?
No, we're using a library called, what's it called now? HID API, it's from Signal 11, I think they're called, Signal 11 software. A really good abstraction layer for HID devices on most of the operating systems.
Oh, nice. So this is actually, it does show up as an HID device then. I was expecting this would use some proprietary, just bulk peripheral on the USB line there. So they show up as a controller or something then. Is that right?
It's like raw HID. They don't show up as controllers really, but they show up as HID devices, pretty much all of them, which is a good thing because then we can we don't have to like add more dependencies and crap.
Good. Have you guys ran into encryption or anything blocking you from writing one of these drivers?
Yes, always. The problem is that because all these devices are meant to use to be locked in with the official driver, there are always things that makes it difficult for us to use a particular type of device. Some are really easy. Like my easiest job was the PSVR from Sony, which is normally meant for the PlayStation 4. I plugged it in and it just started spewing data. And I'm like, well, this is easy, and implemented the driver in like two afternoons. But then others, like the Oculus, have been changing things from the DevKit 1 to DevKit 2 to CV1. And I'm pretty sure that some of the changes are made to make it more difficult for people like us to make things work, because these are not convenience factors from a consumer standpoint. These are just to make sure that others don't get their hands on the device mostly. So yeah, there definitely has been things like packets being very difficult to read because they use weird spacings and alignings, to having to send very specific requests to the device that you have to know, otherwise it will not start reporting certain types of packets that we need. So yeah, that's always fun.
Yeah, a lot of Wireshark packaging.
I bet. I was just going to ask so this is kind of related question. If I am developing a game or something, and I really want to use the open source drivers so I can get compatibility with Linux and everything else, how close of an experience is it going to be for me as a developer using your API and your drivers versus using the dev kit that let's say Oculus puts out? I mean, are they compatible at all? Is it a completely different mechanism and way of developing for this particular, to use this particular driver? Frederick?
So it's right now we don't have positional tracking, which makes it not as good as the official driver, but it's dependent on the device. A lot of the devices they don't have positional, but the DK or rather the CV1, it will be superior with using the proprietary drivers right now.
Okay,
because they have the positional tracking.
Right, right. So I can't necessarily develop for the Oculus using their dev kit and forklift that and pick it up and say, oh, well, if you want to run this application on Linux, you can use the open source driver and it'll work. Or will it? I just won't have the positioning data, maybe.
It will work, sure. But it won't be positional. But we're working on it.
Good. No, that's good. I mean, this is always the way it works, right? It's not like you guys have a team of, 100 people working on this. And on that note, how many people are contributing at this point to the project, Frederick?
Wow. On and off, I think we have had like 6 or 7 people or something like that. More than I expected when I started, that's for sure.
Yeah, that's great. Are you looking for more help? I mean, once people see this and they want to contribute or build something, are you looking for more people to jump in? Do they have to have any particular expertise or anything to help out?
It's pretty much just join our IRC channel and ask us what you want to do, and we'll give you something to do. It's not hard at all. We're a friendly bunch, so... just pop into OpenHND where are we at now? Joey.
Freenode.
Yeah, thank you.
We're on Freenode on the hashtag thingy OpenHND.
Yeah.
I'm kind of curious too, in developing this, are there any dependent libraries that you've had to work with or get things changed in order to make this work? Or is the structure all there already so that you didn't have to go to somebody that owns like the SDL library or something and say, hey, could you please change this to make this work with our driver?
For now, there hasn't been anything like that. To a certain extent, because for the whole USB thing, we just use LippyDappy. And I think that's about the only dependency that we really have for OpenHMD. And even on Android, that's not even a used library. So some are just dependency-free mostly. But knowing that some devices are going to be very more specific when it comes to implementation or not even report as an HID device, it might happen that that we have to do some slight adjustments. oh, actually, there is one that we had to fork, which is for upcoming support for external camera trackers, which is something that the Oculus uses for positional tracking. And that's libuvc, which is the abstraction for things like webcams, for things like this green device over here. Because it did not support opening. Actually, it's very funny because it's the same problem we are having right now. A lot of applications and a lot of libraries don't support opening a second device on the same port. So this is a USB device with, I think, three actual devices on one port, and it can only open the first or the zero device. So we had to push that one in and do a little bit of modification to be able to do to open different types of sensors from this device. But other than that, it's mostly been fine, actually. So,
wow, that's great. I mean, that's not something you always hear about, and it's always a pain when you've got some sort of strange dependency out there and you guys aren't on the same release cycle, and then you have to code to that dependency. It's crazy. So that's good to hear that you're, you know, essentially dependency free with the minor exception. By the way, we didn't get to mention it at the top of the show, which I usually do, but we were all discombobulated because of the video issues we were having. Frederick, where are you speaking to us from?
I'm speaking to you from Gothenburg in Sweden.
Gothenburg, Sweden. Joey, where are you speaking to us from?
From Horen, from the Netherlands, which is, I guess, over the pond from Frederick. So,
well, I asked because I noticed that in your bios you said you're both involved in music, and I thought, well, maybe these guys have a band together or something. But I guess not if you're that far apart. But you both have an interest in music, correct, Frederick? You play some metal, play some music. What instrument do you play?
I do. I play the keyboards.
Nice.
In a death metal band.
Nice. So we got a lot of viewers that like death metal. And Joey, I think you've got a background in music as well, right?
Actually, that music as a full-time profession for a couple of years, mostly as an audio engineer, but also as a studio drummer. I did some guitars here and there, and now I scream in a metal band.
Nice. So you guys are both into metal. I'm just kind of curious. You know, is there anything, let's go to Frederick first, is there anything from, you know, on the musician side and being involved in music that translates over into doing this kind of thing, or is it a completely separate interest for you?
Wow. That's a good question. I don't know, really. Perhaps it helps, like, seeing patterns or something. I can't really tell. Maybe not.
Joey, what about you? I'm just kind of curious because I'm always interested in these, my son's a musician and he's like very intuitive about these things. And you wouldn't think that they would be related, but I kind of think somehow our brains get wired a certain way. Joey, do you think that your interest in music and things is helping you or relating at all to this project?
Well, I actually have a specific type of philosophy for these kind of things, because for me, music is about creation and it's about abstract thinking in such a way that for me, it definitely translates over to when I'm programming or when I'm doing reverse engineering work or stuff, because it's all problem solving. It's all thinking outside of the box, because I don't like writing music that probably has been written already. And even though people say that that's impossible to do, I still try to think about certain things differently and finding different angles. And also from a audio engineering perspective, it's always you have this input signal and you need to get the best out of that input signal and make it work and make it beautiful so people want to listen to it. And I guess you can think about reverse engineering USB devices the same thing, which is, of course, something that every musician always says in interviews. But you have this USB signal and it's just binary data and you're trying to make it beautiful so you can use it and in a normal way, but maybe I'm just bullshitting at the moment. That's also definitely possible.
Well, I don't think so, because that's exactly my thoughts as well, is that I think, especially in the creativity side and the intuitiveness, I think that music does help. And there are scientific studies out there that show that people that study music, do better in math and science, especially math. For whatever reason, because of what you just mentioned, so I just found that interesting that you're both involved in music and yet you're also involved in this creative technological endeavor as well. So, Joey, since we have you up on the screen, well, let's go to Frederick. Actually, sorry, John, I'm going to make you dance around the board there. Frederick, what license is this under, and why did you pick that license?
It's under the Boost license, and we picked it, me and, I should mention, Jacob Bornekrantz, which is the other co-founder of this project. I couldn't have done it without him. We picked it because it was the most free license we could find, pretty much. We wanted anyone to be able to use OpenHMD, regardless of if they make proprietary software or if they make open source software or whatever. So we didn't want to bog it down with like a LGPL or something.
Right. I'm not as familiar with that one. I mean, is it sort of an MIT style license, I assume?
Yeah, it's pretty much MIT, BSD, super free.
Yeah, cool. We don't have Simon on today to give us our lecture about the different open source licenses. He knows them all, man. He's great. He's got them down. So we've got to wrap up. Unfortunately, we're out of time, Frederick, I'm just going to ask you, is there anything that you want to mention that we didn't cover today, or anything you want our audience to know that perhaps didn't get brought up today?
Well, no, not more than that. We would appreciate help if you want to help out with our project. We'd be super grateful if you could put some time into it. If you're not super experienced, we weren't either at first. So it's just join our channel on IRC and ask us what you can do to help, and we'll set you up.
That's great. And Joey, same thing for you. Is there anything we didn't mention that you really think our audience should know about the project?
Well, links are always good, of course. We're on openhmd.net, which is our website. We're on GitHub, so please fork and hopefully contribute back. We have a lot of language bindings, which is always, of course, important to know for people who are not familiar with C, because it's a C API, which we probably haven't mentioned at all now I think about it. But we have bindings for Python, we have bindings for Perl, we have for the six people that uses Perl, we have Java bindings, we have all types of different bindings.
Joey, it's a good thing Randall's. Yeah, it's a good thing Randall's not here. He would have slapped your virtual green hand for saying that about Perl, I'm sure.
Of course. We're going to be a full stem. So if people are interested in hooking up with us, full stem, of course, the free and open source event in Belgium next February will be a good way of poking us and asking us to do stuff, because that's, of course, what conferences are about. That and drinking beer, which is, of course, important as well.
Especially when you're in Belgium. Man.
Yeah, especially when you're in Belgium.
Beer capital of the world.
I guess that's the reason why they chose Brussels to host the event in. So, yeah, and just hang out on IRC. We're on irc.freenode.net on the @openhmd or #openhmd channel. Follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/joeyverwerda or @openhmd.
Great. Awesome. So we've got a couple of questions that we like to ask at the end of each show. And so no exception here. We're going to start with Frederick. What is your favorite scripting language?
It would probably be Bash if it's a simple job, and then Python if it's a bit more advanced.
Nice. I like it. Joey, how about you? Favorite scripting language?
Python, definitely. It's the Blender side that kind of forced it upon me, but I tend to use it whenever I have some small things to do or just stuff that I'm very lazy about.
Right. And Frederick, let's go back to you. What's your favorite editor, your favorite text editor?
I'm a Vim guy. So nice. Vim, yeah. V-I-V-I-V-I, the editor of the beast.
Good man.
And Joey, how about you? What's your favorite text editor?
If it's terminal, and people are going to hate me for this, Nano.
I like Nano.
And, if I'm using something non-terminal bound, it these days it tends to be Sublime.
Nice. Nice. No, I like Nano. I always use I use Nano most often if I'm on a Debian system now, because it's mostly there. And but it's important to know how to use either. I think Vim is the most important because it's everywhere. And then, you know, Emacs isn't a bad choice either if you know how to use that, because you can usually find those on just about any system. But nice, a Nano guy. Love it.
Yeah. I wouldn't say use Emacs because people already have operating systems. So
yeah, they don't need another one.
Randall, no.
Yeah, I know. Randall's head is exploding right now as he's listening to this. Well, Frederick and Joey, thank you very much for joining us today. This has really been interesting. I really didn't know that I assume somebody was working on an open source driver, but I didn't realize that it was this far along and that all the different platforms you support and everything. So I know I learned a lot today. So thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you for having us. Thank you.
All right, so that was Frederick. Again, I'm going to probably mess up their names. I'm sorry. Frederick Holton, co-founder of OpenHMD, and Joey Ferwerda, again, sorry about the pronunciation, from the OpenHMD project. All right, Guillermo, what do you think? What do you think about OpenHMD?
Well, it seems like it's filling a niche that needed to be filled, especially if you want to play around with games and do cool stuff. Especially now that, you know, everybody's using Linux now with the Raspberry Pi and all these platforms that make it a lot easier. I did find it funny that Joey didn't mention his main instrument is the Chroma keyboard. Because he's green. You know? Okay, bad joke.
I get it. I didn't get that at first. And then I was like, Chroma. I think this is really cool. Like I said, I think that this is a project that we absolutely need. And it's always the case, you know, I love that Frederick mentioned the problem we had with video drivers early on, that it was very difficult to get things working in a compatible way with open source video drivers back in the day. And now we have things like OpenGL and other things that we can go to use SDL and so forth. But it was very, very difficult, and I'm really glad that they saw the problem and stepped in and tried to come up with a solution. And they're working on something that looks like it's going to have a great future for people that want to develop something in an open ecosystem. So, just from that aspect, I think this is really wonderful. And who knows? I mean, maybe it'll take off. A lot of times, what happens with these projects is that the vendors that were writing proprietary software come along and start supporting some of those API calls or whatever. They start integrating stuff into their project. I know that's happened with both NVIDIA and ATI. This is great for any way you look at it. I think this is really great that they're doing this. So thanks to them for being on and talking about really great. You know what's really great, Guillermo? Is some of the guests that are coming up on our show. So I want to tell you about those right now. How's that for a transition? So just to let you know what's coming up, I believe Randall will be back next week. We're going to have Taras Balog. How's that for a last name? Taras Balog on the show. He's going to be talking about OpenNMS, Nancy, Mary, Sam, a carrier-grade, highly integrated open source platform designed for building network monitoring solutions. So if you're looking for an open source network monitoring solution, this should be really interesting. Also on January 24th, we're going to have David Steele on to talk about PG Backrest. It took me a while to figure out what that was. PG Backrest. But it turns out it's a simple, reliable backup and restore system that can seamlessly scale up to the largest databases and workloads. So the PG there is talking about Postgres for you database geeks out there. And then on January 31st, Tyler Jewell will be on talking about Eclipse CHE. It's the next generation Eclipse platform, developer workspace server, and cloud IDE. So an IDE that runs in the cloud, and there are several of those out there now. So that will be interesting to talk to Tyler about that. So that's our schedule. You know, as always, you can follow us at Floss Weekly on Twitter. Plus Floss Weekly on Google Plus. You can go to the chat room at irc.twit.tv and you can watch us live streaming. Hello with all of our faults, like what we had this morning. You can watch us live at live.twit.tv and see all of the goofy stuff we do before and after the show. It's a lot of fun. Guillermo, anything you want to plug today?
Well, I guess people can follow me on Twitter. I am under at GAMARAL, Gamarel. And I also have a YouTube channel where I do videos, which you can also just either Google my name, this thing that's down here, or basically just look for my Twitter and I'll have a link there.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah, it's awesome. I watch your shows, man. I watch your shows. You got a new camera or something. I was watching that You're testing it out and then all this stuff. Yeah, I watch every once in a while. I subscribe, okay, man. as far as I'm concerned, you can subscribe to me all day long. I'm on Twitter, Facebook, and Google Plus. I'm on Google Plus as well. It's pretty much anywhere you want to follow me. You can find me online. I don't think I really have anything to plug. I do have a book that's coming out this spring. It's going to be called Linux for Makers. It'll be published by Maker Media, and I'm putting the finishing touches on the first draft today. I'm so excited. I've just got one little section to write on hooking up, how to hook up our Arduino to the Raspberry Pi and communicate back and forth. So it's really exciting, and I'm going to get that done and polish things up, and hopefully that'll be out in bookstores this spring. So be sure to look for that. And if you're in the Northern California area and you're looking for a good, great makerspace, I run Benicia Makerspace and we do a mini maker fair. It's coming up on April 2nd here in Benicia. So if you're in the area and you want to either go to a makerspace and hang out with hackers and people that love technology and fun things and art, you can do that. Or if you just want to come to our mini maker fair, we'd really appreciate it because any proceeds that go from that go back into the makerspace and allow us to do programs for kids and community development work and all kinds of stuff. So really appreciate that as well. But I think that's going to wrap it up for this edition of Floss Weekly. We'll see you next time on Floss Weekly.